You're probably unaware that tomorrow is National Barbershop Quartet Day, but that doesn't mean that you won't recognize barbershop singing when you hear it. This type of four-part harmony singing has been present in American culture since the 1800s and has continued to remain popular for nearly 200 years. It's the topic of today's Please Explain, and we are joined now by Gage Avril, Dean of Arts at the University of British Columbia, author of Four Parts, No Waiting, A Social History of American Barbershop Quartet. Also with us is Peggy Graham, a 50-year member and former president of Sweet Adelines International, the barbershop organization and competition organizer for female barbershop singing. I'll be speaking of female barbershop singing. Oh, and along with that, we have the Luster Quartet to give us a taste of what this type of music actually sounds like today. I'm very pleased to welcome everybody to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
And to our audience, if you have a question about this type of music, its origins, its place in American culture, anything else, give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org or tweet us at Leonard Lopate. And to kick things off, we should get straight to the music. So, Lori, Jenny, and Kate, take it away.
This is just the kind of day that you dream about when you open up your mouth. A song pops out, zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine in my way. Zippity-doo-da, everything is satisfactual, zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day.
Mr. Bluebird on my
shoulder.
It's the truth,
truth, it's actual. Everything is satisfactual, zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay.
That was Luster Quartet from Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you, ladies. We'll hear from you again a little later in the show. Peggy, we just heard a not one of the classic barbershop quartet songs. We heard something, what Zippity-Doo-Dah was a Disney song?
It was a Disney song, right.
So anything can be transformed into barbershop?
Just about anything can be translated into the barbershop style, yes. It doesn't mean that it necessarily qualifies as a competition vehicle for us, but you can take almost anything and put it into the barbershop style. Now, that means that the melody is not the highest part that's being sung. There's a harmony part that is above the melody consistently, and you heard the bass singer who is consistently below the melody, and then the baritone fills in what's left.
That would be like 1-3-5-8.
Yes, or 1-3-5 flatted seventh, which is our favorite chord, the barbershop seventh. Yes.
Gage, how is barbershop different from other forms of a cappella music?
Well, we've just heard a little bit about the arrangement of the vocal tones. So, yeah, first of all, there's the this tradition in close harmony barbershop style to put that melody note below, but there's also a whole range. I mean, this is a style that's evolved over the last 150 years here in North America, primarily.
Do we know how it began?
Yeah, in fact, I've written about this, and I think others have as well, but originally there was a fad for back in the 1830s for these visiting folkloric troops from the Alpine region, from Germany, from Austria. And they brought this term minstrels with them, and they dressed and sang folk music in costumes. This it's quite an amazing history because it passed into American practice, American groups imitating it, then into blackface minstrelsy, spread into black neighborhoods and barbershops and social centers, as well as having a sort of, there were white groups and black groups all through the 19th century singing it. What we know now as barbershop was refashioned in the 30s and the 40s originally as a kind of a nostalgic movement. But yeah, we've there's a 150 year great history of this very, very music, American musical style of singing. And it has, it's embraced a number of gestures. I would call them musical gestures. We just heard at the end of that great quartet that you just played. That,
they actually were singing live, Gage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we heard them sing a swipe where the, you know, a couple voices hold their notes and the others move them down or up. And you get these beautiful changing chords.
You betcha.
Very, very characteristic of barbershop.
The four-part harmonies remind me of early American Christian singing like Sacred Harp, shape note singing. Any connection between the two?
Well, there's a connection in that these were the what became the homegrown vocal styles of America, and many of them outside of the kind of tutorial singing that were being done by the European-trained vocal teachers in the early U.S. There were a lot of these, what I would call vernacular styles, that grew up here, and barbershop was one of them. But so also, you know, you have spiritual group singing, gospel, and those early, often rural religious styles like shape note.
One strain of black gospel music is called quartet, and it started off, Peggy, as a kind of a barbershop singing style.
Yes, there are a lot of similarities there, and that is a part of our heritage, are those black quartets singing around the barbershop. That was, you know, and they tell me that each barbershop would have its own quartet. That was part of what got people to come in.
So the style started before people started singing in the barbershop, but the barbershop became so associated with it. It became
they called it that barbershop harmony.
And since what about women? Because the Sweet Adelines go back a while, but
we do.
Were women singing barbershop all the way back then? Was it called
Shop? The men's organization, which was at that point the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America, a long moniker. The men's organization started in the late 30s, and we started in 1945. Edna Mae Anderson, whose husband was a barbershopper, decided that the guys were having way too much fun, that the women could do this too. And so she was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the same place where the men started, and had some of her friends over, and they started. And before long, they had an 80-voice chorus in Tulsa.
Well, how different is it than male barbershop, other than you're singing in a higher register?
Women's voices are just a bit different than men's, and men ring chords differently than women do. So more spread chords work better for men, and tighter voiced harmonies work better for women.
Gage, didn't the invention of... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point something out, because you used an important term here, and that's ring. And when you asked earlier, Lynn, about the style... One of the things that has come to be characteristic of barbershop singing is the intonation of the voices that allows the voices to lock up and produce
overtones.
A kind of overtone phenomenon above the voices. You often hear it sort of ring above the chords, and that's when that's done really nicely. It's almost a physical process.
Yes.
I mean, you can feel it.
When you're in the middle of it, the beats actually are in your ears, and it can feel a little scary at times.
It is one of the wonderful things about barbershop is that it hits you at a very visceral level. You know, it gets your gut. And the whole is greater than the sum of the parts when it's good barbershop, because you are hearing some five and sometimes six notes come out of four voices. So,
but the blend is really important.
It is, yes.
This is not a star kind of music.
Yes.
Everybody plays an equal role.
Yes. It requires teamwork.
Now, Gage, didn't the invention of the record player play a role in the spread of popularity?
Oh, absolutely. One of the interesting pieces of the barbershop history is that when the first shops were set up in the 1890s to record in New Jersey Edison's shop, and they found that having it was very difficult to record an orchestra, so but having four voices crowd around one of those old horns was perfect for the early popular music industry. Mm-hmm. So there was a sort of a burgeoning recording industry of quartets, both black and white, and including women as well. The women singing in barbershop goes back to the 19th century, or in that style, in the close harmony style. And they, those records circulated, and a couple of the stars who came out of the late 1890s, the Edison Quartet, the American Quartet, Peerless, and those others, were probably the most popular artists in North America up until about in the early 1920s. And it was really those recordings when the two organizations, men's and women's organizations, began to form. It was a lot of these recordings that people remembered of that period.
Well, what led to the revival of in the 1930s? It became popular again.
Well, it's a great question, and the I've looked at where this emerged, and of course, it emerged from in the Midwest of the U.S. from Oklahoma up to St. Louis through to Chicago. There was a kind of a middle-class American world there that with many people involved in social organizations, men's social organizations, and Rotary and things like that, and a lot of connections with traveling salesmen moving up through the region. People began to come together. It was during the Great Depression, so things were tough, and people were looking for entertainment. People were feeling a little nostalgic.
And then in gospel music, the Jubilee style became really popular, and that's a form of barbershop as well.
Now, very, very close to barbershop.
We were more of a singing society at that point in time. Singing was something that was taught in our public schools, and it was something that you did at home. There was often a piano if there wasn't anything else, or someone had a guitar, and families sang after dinner because they didn't have anything else to do, you know?
But barbershop requires everybody singing in tune. You can't rely on that instrument.
That's true.
You start off with a little...
A pitch pipe.
Pitch pipe, and then from then on, if somebody strays, you're in trouble.
That's true. But, you know, when you're in the car going someplace or you were on the wagon, you don't have the piano to go, you know? So you have to be able to hit your pitch and go, and you learn how to sing harmony.
Now, we're going to go to a little break, but before we do, we're going to ask the Luster Quartet, which has been a top 10 international quartet since 2012, to sing another song for us. We'll figure it out. You don't even have to tell us.
Church bells call me, so I'm getting married in the morning, and you know I'm gonna hear the bells. Ding, 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 ding. Kick up a rumpus, better get your compass. Get me to the church, get me to the church. For Pete's sake, get me to the church on time. Go to the chapel right on time, the church on time.
And we are back with today's Please Explain look at Barbershop Quartet. We have a wonderful quartet with us, the Lester Quartet from Baltimore, Maryland, who are performing live. Also with us are Gage Avril, who is the Dean of Arts at the University of British Columbia, author of Four Parts, No Waiting, A Social History of American Barbershop Quartet, and Peggy Graham, a 50-year member and former president of Sweet Adelines International, the barbershop organization and competition organizer for female barbershop quartet singing. And Peggy, when the quartet was singing, they were moving around, they were moving their hands. This is radio. They didn't have to do it. Is it possible to sing barbershop without doing the act?
Well, you know, their faces and facial expression are a part of the vocal production that they do, that lifted countenance. But the physical movements that they have actually help them with the inflections, that the vocal inflections that they're doing. So, yes, and you know, they're performers. So you could tell. You know that you perform on radio, and your facial and what you do have an effect there. And so they were here performing, and that's a part of their performance.
And as the audience, I appreciated that. when I think of barbershop quartets, Gage, I see flat, round straw hats, stripes, and spats.
Sure.
How did that come to be the look of the barbershop quartet?
Well, if we barbershop wasn't alone back in the early 20s and 30s, especially the early 30s, in a great deal of nostalgia about the turn of the century. So I remember these World Fair, leading up to the New York World's Fair in the 30s, there were all these events that the city held that recreated a turn of the century, smaller city world of the turn of the century. It was, I think, during that period, very tough period of the financial collapse. There was so much attachment to a period where they thought, you know, maybe America was a little bit greater and life was a little simpler. And so you saw those kinds of hats in all sorts of contexts. In some of them, you'd see barbershop quartets looking like a small group of, you know, street corner urchins in New York dressed in, you know, turn of the century New York style. In other cases, it was the Midwest, the look of the Midwest park and the straw hats. There were police bands, there were groups that looked like cowboys, but it really was part of a wave of nostalgia for an earlier period in American history.
Peggy, what does Sweet Adelines typically wear?
Sweet Adelines wear a lot of sequins. We like flash, and yes, we do, and things that point up the face. Yes, for stage costuming, that's what we do.
And when you're judging, are those important, or the movements, the choreography of the group?
I'm a showmanship judge, and yes, it, to the extent that they help the performer get the message of the music across the footlights to the audience, yes, they are.
Now, we've invited our audience to join in. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. We also, by the way, have a video of Lester Quartet on our show page in case you want to see them. You were going to say something, Gage?
Well, I was just saying, Peggy was talking about the showmanship, but this is a movement that takes the song so seriously. There's a great deal of reverence around the song. And so the performers all speak of selling that song and the things you've talked about, both the costuming. And there are very few quartets or choruses on the men's side that look like our, you know, imagination of them, like the old Disney style of quartet. These days, a very, very different dress, but in the choreography and the faces that we were talking about earlier, that Peggy was mentioning in the dress, it's really all to sell that song, to make it the most important delivery and the best delivery they can.
Exactly, Gage. Yes.
Let's take some calls. Emily from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was calling because I've always been curious about the social experience of being in a barbershop quartet and within a group, if how decisions get made and is there a leader and how do you figure out the arrangements and what are rehearsals like? And I was curious both the historical perspective and what's it like to be in today and if that's changed over time.
And I've invited some of the members of the Lustre Quartet to join in this conversation. So who wants to respond first?
I'll start. I'm Jenny. I sing bass. Our quartet is very egalitarian. We make all of our decisions by consensus, and we each bring our ideas for performance and for artistry to the show. And we have always been that way in our particular quartet. Other quartets have different dynamics, and so it really depends on the individual personalities. Oftentimes, the lead singer will take the lead role in decision-making.
Now, I assume all of you grew up in the rock. You're young, so you grew up in the rock and roll era.
Yes.
Did you hear barbershop in any of the things that you were listening to when you were a kid?
I personally, I'm Lori, I sing the lead part. I did not listen to any barbershop growing up. In fact, I didn't hear barbershop that I knew of until I moved to Baltimore about 12 years ago and realized then in college I actually did sing in a barbershop group with men.
Mm-hmm. Without knowing
didn't
it.
Didn't know it. I filled in for someone one
but
day.
But doesn't doo-wop and some of the other pop music of the 50s and 60s, groups like the Miracles and the Chiffons, share similarities with Barbershop Peggy?
There's a basic difference. If you looked at a kind of a map of the sound of those groups would be conical. I'm sorry, it would be like a can, straight up and down, mm-hmm. okay? The shape of Barbershop is like a cone, okay? So the tenor is the smallest, it's at the top, and then the lead and the baritone come down, and then the bass is at the bottom.
The lead is an alto, generally.
Yes, it's in that. It's in an alto range. Both the lead and the baritone are in the alto range, mm-hmm. okay? But we have that solid bass foundation where the groups like the Miracles and the Shirelles, they all sing the same volume, you understand? So our lead is, our sound is bass dominant, lead predominant. How's that?
Okay. Emily, thank you. We go now to Phyllis. Hi, Phyllis. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Leonard. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know, there was a girls group called the Cordettes that was extremely popular during the 50s, had
yes.
hits like Mr. Sandman, and I want to know if they were considered barbershop.
They absolutely were. The Cordettes were a Sweet Adeline quartet. Marjorie Latsko, as a matter of fact, was at our last international competition and was our celebrity judge. And she was the tenor of the Cordettes. And they started out, Walter Latsko, her husband, was a famous barbershop arranger and did some amazing work. And, yes, the Cordettes started out as a Sweet Adeline quartet. Of course, they weren't the only Sweet Adeline people to go on to commercial music. Right now, Nila Pekarik is with the Lumineers, who sing Hey Ho, and other. They're out on tour, and she's competing with her barbershop quartet this spring.
Gage, you've written that the musical The Music Man is an important part of the story. Why?
Well, the this was one of those great American sort of popular culture moments that helped to capture barbershop and then spread it in the popular imagination. I mean, I mentioned earlier the use of a quartet at the beginning of Disneyland, you know, right back at the 1955 or so when it started. That was a kind of a central piece of Walt Disney's world. And Broadway was another great sort of jumping off point, and that's, of course, that's a musical that's moved into ongoing productions in high schools and around and small town performance all around North America. So people have come to know Barbershop through these, and it's been maybe a little bit of an icon, popular icon through it, Meredith Wilson's musical.
Before we get to any more calls, I think it'd be nice if we heard something else from the Lester Quartet.
Much more to give. Alone in my life, this is no way to live. Hiding the truth behind a mask. In the midst of my wandering, I pause to
Lester Quartet of Baltimore, Maryland. A listener wonders if you would ever do a version of a song by Beyonce or Lady Gaga, something like that. I know Lady Gaga probably is singing What Kind of Fool I Am now that she's doing duets with Tony Bennett, but
she's going
to
sing So We Sing.
The answer is no at the moment.
I assume. We don't have anything in our repertoire now, but...
Oh, there are a couple of choruses out there doing If You Like It, You Better Put a Ring on It, you know.
Now, has this music been segregated for a large part of its history? I understand that there was a time when the Sweet Adelines, there weren't integrated groups. Has that changed in recent years?
Many, many years ago, yes. We have women of all races and creeds in our organization, absolutely, yes.
Going to sneak Penny in here. Penny, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Can you make it quick?
I didn't have a question. I just have a comment. My husband's grandmother, who lives in Victoria, British Columbia, was a member of a Sweet Adelines group for absolutely forever. And it really saved her life when her husband passed away and her partner passed away. These women were all she had, and I really just want to thank you for keeping this going. We loved getting her birthday messages because she would sing with a friend of hers in always perfect harmony, happy birthday to us. And she had a stroke 3 years ago, so she's not singing anymore, but I know that she would love to know that I mentioned her and that you were here on the radio.
Okay, thank you so much. Another listener wonders about how many Sweet Adeline members there are and if she was interested in joining one. How does that happen?
There are about 23,000 of us across 5 continents in the world, which is fantastic. And just go to www.sweetadeline, or just Google Sweet Adelines, and you'll find us. And there's a tool on our webpage to find a chorus that's close to you. And we would love for you to do that.
My great thanks to Penny Graham, who is a 50-year member of the Sweet Adelines, former president, and Gage Avril, who is the author of 4 Parts, No Waiting, A Social History of American Barbershop Quartet, and, of course, the Luster Quartet from Baltimore, Maryland, and also George Wellington, who masterfully joined forces with our regular audio engineer, Debbie Daughtry, to engineer this past segment. Thank you all so much. And could you just take us out for maybe 30 seconds or so?